The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into Hour 3. It's a delight to have in studio our dear friend, Rabbi Pinchas Alush. Rabbi Alush, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. He is the head rabbi at Congregation Beth Tefillah in Scottsdale, T-E-F-I-L-L-A-H, on Shea Boulevard, where he always says all are welcome, religious or not, observant or not, Jewish or not. And he is also the host of the Rabbi Alush podcast, heard on Apple Podcasts. Rabbi, welcome back. It's good to see you, sir.
Thank you so much. Pleasure being back.
I was at an event about a week ago. I think I mentioned to you, but we'll just do it for the purpose of the rest of the audience. And a woman came up to me and said how meaningful it is that you join us and that what your son is doing and that she keeps him in her prayers every single day. Do you want to give us an update on yourself?
Yes. First, if she's listening, I want to thank her. That meant so much. My son is doing well. He is on a base right by the border of Gaza, and they do still go in and out. But I really want to thank you, listeners, for not only asking about him, but mainly for praying for him and blessing him. I know your prayers are heard, and I know that it helps the greater good in the world.
And go ahead and give his name again for their audience.
Sure.
They like to say a name.
So
sometimes.
His full name is Yisrael Mordechai Chaim.
You have some guests. You want to introduce your guests to
Yes, I have my dear friend here, River Cohen from San Diego, with his daughter May, who I'm so proud of because she's going to become bat mitzvah in just a few months. And she's doing so well in her preparations.
Well, that's one of the coolest names I've ever heard, River Cohen. Are you in music? Are you a musician?
No, my parents were hippies.
Oh, that's all right.
In the 60s, yeah.
Hippies in the 60s,
yeah,
and you became River? Okay. Some people are summer, some people are flower. You're River. Okay, good. I love it. And you got the beard to prove it, so you're maintaining the tradition. That's wonderful. Okay, Rabbi Alush, we are We like to, I remind the audience, we like to have you in here when you're in town as our last hour of the show of the week to get everyone into a bit more of a spiritual or religious-minded or less hectic kind of mindset, a Sabbath, a Shabbos mindset, if you will. And that's why we have you, so thank you for doing this. We often will talk about the portion of the Bible or the Torah that is read across the world every Saturday, every Jewish Sabbath, Shabbos. And talk through it and about it. It's an interesting one this week because a lot of laws of eating are put down or elucidated in this week's portion. A lot of people have questions about the laws of kosher or kashrut or why Jews can only eat certain things, and we get that in this portion. Shemini, right? Shemini. Mm-hmm. How do you say it?
That's correct. Shemini, and yes, it does focus a lot on the laws of keeping kosher, the animals that are kosher and the animals that are not kosher. Just to give two pointers. Pointer number one is a very general one, and that is that as human beings, we have to be in full control of ourselves and of our inclinations. Sometimes food, as other things, get in the way, or they control us instead of us controlling them. And therefore, these laws of keeping kosher, to remind everyone that you are in control of the food. You are higher than the food, and you have, therefore, the power to channel the food and the energy that it gives you in the most positive way. So that's one pointer. A second pointer is that it's interesting to note just one idea, and that is that the kosher animals are non-predator animals because in many ways the Torah was given to us over 3,000 years ago believes what many scientists believe in today, and that is that we are what we eat. Mm-hmm. And if we eat animals that are predatory, we can sometimes even inherit those characteristics which we do not want to. And therefore, the Torah keeps us far away from them so that we remain refined and dignified.
Well done. Thank you for that. I want to go more specifically into it, but it comes at the end of the portion. So if it's okay, I'm gonna leave that as a tease for later, and we'll come back and circle back to that, because I took a few notes on a few other elements that get us there. So Leviticus 9:1 for those that want to follow along. Shemini means eight,
mm-hmm.
because of when this is coming to us. There's an awfully tragic thing that takes place here. And I guess there's a lot of debate, mm-hmm. Talmudic debate about the cause, but Moses' brothers, Aaron's sons,
right,
get taken off the earth.
That's right. So in that chapter in Leviticus, we read about how they inaugurated the tabernacle that was built after much love and devotion invested in it. But during the inauguration, at the highest peak of their joy, a tragedy happens. The two sons of Aaron, the high priest, offer an offering that was not asked of them, as the verse teaches us, and then they die. God was punishing them. And Aaron, their father, is watching their death, and his reaction is that he remains silent. Vayidom Aharon. Many parts of this story shout at us. But first, of course, is where these arguments come into play, and that is, why did they die? Why did they deserve such a punishment? So they brought an offering that was not asked of them. But what's wrong with that? And such a severe punishment for such a small crime? So you have many different opinions. One of them is that they were supposed to be the successors of Moses. And at one point in the journey in the desert, one looked at the other and pointed to Moses and said, when will this old man die, Moses? And we'll take his place already.
They were angling.
Right. Yeah. And then a voice from the heavens came out and said, we'll see who dies before who.
Mm-hmm.
To teach us how careful we have to be with our words, with our desires that may be very badly manipulated. Mm-hmm. But that might have been their crime. And there are other theories, of course. But I think that the common denominator between all theories is that they did not just die because they brought an offering that was not asked of them, but they died because they did not recognize the role that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, when we don't recognize the role that we have and we cross boundaries trying to act like other people or do things that are not meant for us, then we die a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a strong reminder that we were born unique, or as Oscar Wilde famously said, be yourself because everybody else is taken.
Mm-hmm.
You are born with a certain role,
mm-hmm.
and you have certain boundaries. So live it up and don't try and be someone else.
Yeah. We've talked about this, I think, perhaps a year ago, actually, on the occasion of this parsha before. I like that. I think it's from Elie Wiesel's book, Souls on Fire, where there's I think it's a midrash, that the question you'll be asked when you meet your maker is not why you weren't more like so-and-so or why you weren't more like Abraham. Zusha, why weren't you more like Zusha, right? Something like that.
Very good. Why weren't you like yourself?
Yeah.
That's right. Now, it's an ongoing question, let's admit. It's, you know, myself today might be very different than the self tomorrow.
Yeah.
But there are still very core principles to ourselves, or skills and talents that we each possess, that serve as the ingredients to our true selves.
Rabbi, there's an interesting consolation, too, here that Moses gives his brother. He says, this is what the Lord spoke of when he said, among those who are near to me, I will show myself holy. In the sight of all the people, I will be honored. And it says, Aaron remained silent. In other words, Moses, as I take it, or as I read about it, is trying to tell Aaron, console him. This is what happens to the holy people too. This is, the holier you are, the more is expected of you.
Right. And that's right. But to go even deeper,
yeah.
I think there's a lesson that is just so powerful. It would be a pity not to mention it. And that is that Moses was telling Aaron, look, what they were willing to die for.
Yeah.
They were willing to die for God. They were willing to die in this holy context of the tabernacle while bringing an offering. And that makes them holy. And therefore, you should be comforted by that. But it again shouts the question, what are we willing to die for?
Mm-hmm.
What am I willing to devote myself to mm-hmm. the point that I'm willing to risk my life for it?
Yeah.
Are there any values in life that are greater than me
yeah.
that I'm really willing to give myself over to?
Yeah.
if I do have those types of values, then yes, then my life is meaningful, purposeful, and even holy.
Yeah.
But if it's all about me and I'm not willing to die for anything, then really I will live a life that is much less than holy and perhaps even shallow.
Yeah, maybe that's even an interesting prefatory remark to the laws of kashrut or kosher, in a way that it's not just about appetite, right? There's something more important than just our immediate gratification. Well, again, set the table, too many metaphors, about for that in a little bit. I want to stay on this area just a little bit longer. Rabbi Pinchas Alush from Congregation Beth Tefillah is our guest. The Rabbi Alush podcast on Apple Podcasts, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. That was special pleading for your guest, Rabbi, who said his parents were hippies. We came in with a little Arlo Guthrie, with a little Hebrew folk music. So hopefully, River, that makes you feel more at home from the hippie neighborhood you grew up in. San Diego?
No, it was Mendocino, California.
Mendocino, California, then down to San Diego. Okay, and then now here. You're moving ever southward.
We're here.
Okay. Oh, you're here now permanently. Okay. A lot of people move from here to San Diego. They don't usually. Okay. I see the kind of congregation we're running.
We try to go back and forth.
Okay. All right.
We actually commute for Rabbi Alush.
You're not alone. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest. A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. Last time you were here, last week, I think it was, Rabbi, the week before, we were talking a little bit. I asked you a kind of a personal question about people who live an Orthodox or an observant life have a lot on them, you know, from the moment you wake up to the moment you put your head on the pillow at night. There's all not only just praying three times a day, but, you know, there's a lot of different rules from everything from how you comport yourself to how you put your shoes on, quite frankly. It's a lot of work just to take care of yourself. And then I said, now be a rabbi, because you have to do that for yourself, obviously. You have to take care of yourself, but also serve a community, which is probably always in need of a rabbi, whether it's for happy occasions or mournful occasions, or whether they ask a question about what they should do in a certain circumstance. And I asked you, how do you do it? And you talked about the energy that you have and the greatness in the exhaustion that you sometimes, you know. But perhaps something in this Parsha, too, my friend Tevi was pointing out, he listens, in Leviticus 9:7, it says, "Then Moses said to Aaron, come forward to the altar and sacrifice your sin offering and your burnt offering, making expiation for yourself and for the people, and sacrifice the people's offering and make expiation for them as God has commanded. First you, then them." I thought that might have been on point a little bit. First you have to, unless we're reading too much into it.
No, that is on point. You're right. You cannot give to others if you are exhausted or depleted, to use your word. But the context of that portion, if I may,
yeah,
is fascinating, because Aaron had just lost two of his sons.
Right.
And the natural response is despondence, depression, sadness, grief. So Moses is really asking himself the question, how can I pull him out of that grief? How can I make him live again? And what he does, he tells Aaron, just go and continue to do what you have to do. Bring that offering. And you'll see that your emotions will then settle down. And in many ways, there's a very powerful lesson here, because very often we face challenges and they get the better of us. And we sink in all these types of moods. And the question is, how do we address ourselves then? Do we just speak to those emotions? Do we wallow in them even more so? Or do we just do it, as Nike says? Mm-hmm. Do we just focus on action?
Mm-hmm.
And here Moses teaches us that if you focus on action, just continue to live, even though it may be hard, but continue to devote yourself to deed, then you will see that your emotions will settle and maybe even disappear. That's what happens to Aaron, and that's what can happen to each and every one of us.
This is a theme you and I come to quite often, again and again, on any number of issues about actions and beliefs, that your actions can change your thinking more so than your thinking. You can't think your way into good behavior, but you can act your way into better thinking, right?
Mm, very well said.
It's part and parcel of that, which comes from another part, too. First, we will do, and then we will understand.
Right. When the Jews received the Torah on Mount Sinai, God offered it to them, they proclaimed, we will do, and then we will listen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, okay, let's see what's in it. Let's see how we feel about it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll figure out whether to follow it and do it or not. They were committed to deed. And when God saw that, he said, okay, now we can work. Now we can have a relationship. Because what I seek most is deed. I think it's so true, especially in a generation that focuses so much on feelings and emotions. It's not that feelings and emotions are bad. Don't get me wrong. There's room for them too. But they cannot trump deed.
Yeah.
Deed must be the guiding force. Deed must be in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And if we are committed to deed, we'll see that our hearts will then follow. And like you said, our thoughts will then be realigned in a positive way.
Yeah, this is an interesting maybe first example in the annals of human behavior or even perhaps counseling. Aaron has this grief and Moses is in a way saying, okay, what are you going to do about it? Right? What are you going to do about it?
Right, exactly. And we see, by the way, it's a repeating theme. Moses got that from God himself.
Yeah.
Because just imagine, Passover is coming up. The story of the Grand Exodus. Here is a nation that has been enslaved for 210 years. So you can imagine the PTSD in each and every one of those slaves. Yet what does Moses do? What does God tell Moses to do? Tell them to march forth and receive the Torah. There's no time now for psychologists. There's no time now for PTSD. Now, I'm not saying again that there is a time for that and everyone is his own separate case. But what I am seeing here is really a consistency of thought, and that is that we have to be committed to deed. Practically speaking, I would challenge anyone out there that is feeling a little despondent today to go and do a good deed. Go and visit the sick. Go and pick up the phone and cheer someone up. Go and give charity to the poor. Go and smile at your neighbor, and you'll see that deed alone will take you out of that mood.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even if you don't have the ability to do that or know someone who might be in need of something, although I think that probably might be more of an excuse than a reality, even just go exercise, even go walk or something. You know, people who are regularly fit or regularly or routinely exercise will sometimes say, well, I'm not sure if I feel like working out or not. Once you start thinking that way, the right answer is go do it. And no question, you will have a better day.
Right.
You will have a better day, mm-hmm. one way or the other. You go and visit a sick person, you will have a better day. They will too, but yeah. So will you, right?
Right. I often say that I wish there could be two switches in addition to all of the beautiful organs and limbs that we have in our bodies. And that is a switch on the heart and a switch on the mind. Sometimes we just have to tell the mind, it's off.
Yeah.
Stop thinking too much.
Yeah.
Or even the heart.
Yeah.
It's off. Stop feeling too much.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah. I like that line. In The Wizard of Oz, he says to the Tin Man, you don't want a heart. It's an imperfect instrument. They've never made one that doesn't break. right.
Right. I remember that one.
But the point being, just go and. Obviously, but with the backing, not just do anything, obviously. We are given a code here, a code of what the right thing to do is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do the next right thing is what they say in 12-step programs.
Do the next right thing. And look, amazingly, it works beautifully for Aaron.
Yeah.
And he carries, of course, the grief and the tragedy of his sons dying.
Yeah.
But he continues on to lead the nation with vigor and conviction. Because of that deed.
Rabbi Alush and I will be right back. He is the host of the Rabbi Alush podcast on Apple Podcasts and the head rabbi at Congregation Beth Tefillah, where all are welcome. Be right back. Oh, you are going to do it. Okay, welcome back. I have no power here. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Maybe that's the way it should be. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest. There was a great profile of you in the Jewish News Syndicate this week, jns.org. And it reminded me, Rabbi Alush, of how many different countries you've lived in, how many different languages you speak. How many? Seven? Five? Six? How many languages?
I don't know how many countries I've lived in.
Okay.
Probably around seven.
Uh-huh.
I speak fluently four languages.
Four languages. I think closer to six. Okay. But do you dream? Do you dream in different languages? Or can you tell?
Well, it depends who's in my – if you're in my dream, yeah. I speak in English.
Yeah. 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 Just words you can't say on radio. I understand. When did you know you wanted to be a rabbi?
At the age of 18.
Really?
At the age of 18. I don't know if your listeners are interested in this.
I am.
I'm not too interested in this.
I am.
But look, I wanted to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a criminal attorney.
Yeah.
And at the age of 18, I was living in Israel, and my trajectory was first to go and serve in the army, as every 18-year-old needs to do in Israel, and then to go and pursue my studies in law. But I wasn't accepted to the Israeli army because I have a genetic disease. Thank God I'm healthy and good, but it's with me. And I had an existential crisis, really. And I went to my beloved rabbi, my mentor, Rabbi Steinsaltz, and he said to me, look, just I think you need to leave Israel, leave the energy you're in. And I hear that there's a position in Geneva, Switzerland, for a youth director in the Jewish community. Why don't you apply and go and work there? I did. I worked in Geneva. And working with the community changed my entire trajectory because it made me want to be involved in impacting communities. And I said, what better way to do that than become a rabbi? So that's when I decided to
become. And your family's lineage is goes back to what? Is it Moroccan? Is it French? What is it?
So my on my mother's side, it is Moroccan.
Uh-huh.
On my father was born in France, but his father was from Algeria.
Okay. So, and were they, was the whole lineage for as long as, or as much as you know, was it religious or what many would call Orthodox? Or?
No, and no. In fact, I'm the first rabbi in five generations.
Oh, really?
Yes. My grandfather was a soldier in the French army.
Uh-huh.
My father's an aeronautical engineer. My mother's a psychologist. There aren't too many rabbis.
They're not super religious or not
lineage.
Orthodox.
No, nor did they grow up religious or Orthodox. In any way, they were always very connected, you know, soulfully and heart in their heart, but not indeed so much.
So, how did you hook up with someone as legendary as Rabbi Steinsaltz?
Oh, so my parents slowly but surely became more and more observant. They met Rabbi Steinsaltz, and through them,
okay,
I got to meet him, and I had the privilege of being in his schools.
Yeah, he was one of the greatest sages of our lifetime. Passed away three years ago?
Yes, passed away just 3 years ago. Yeah. He was recognized really globally. The Time magazine called him a once in a millennium scholar.
Yeah.
Newsweek magazine, I remember, wrote a piece about him, calling him a type of mind that comes around only once every couple of thousand years.
Yeah.
He was truly a genius of the highest order. And he impacted this world in so many beautiful and eternal ways.
To be able to have a teacher of that level and one who takes interest in you is a tremendous blessing and gift bestowed upon you. But it must be, too, quite a privilege for someone like yourself to have someone like that take interest in you. I don't know if you might want to say a word to young people about the importance of finding a good teacher. And because I find it's rarer and rarer, and I find also children more and more, or youth more and more, in need of them.
Absolutely. I cannot underemphasize the need for a mentor in life, a mentor that can tell you things the way things are, a mentor that can see the big picture when we are stuck with seeing just one side of it, a mentor that can be wise enough to guide you in specific directions that you wouldn't have thought of.
No.
And I would say that this is true with my mentor. I wouldn't be where I am today without Rabbi Steinsaltz,
right,
without other mentors that I've had, and obviously without the inspiration of the Lubavitcher Rebbe that we've also mentioned a few times. But I think that there is no going forward in life and no maximizing your potential without a mentor.
Okay. Thank you for that. We're all better for them, and I'm better for having you as one of mine, if you'll have me. Rabbi Pinchas Salush, I will be right back, and we're going to talk about answering to a higher authority when it comes to eating hot dogs. Yeah, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Little Crosby, Stills, and Nash quoting the biblical dictum to teach your children well there. Was that deliberate, young David?
No. Of course it was.
Rabbi Pinchas Salush is my guest, A-L-L-O-U. C-H-E. All right. In this portion, Leviticus 9 forward, the portion of the Torah we call Shemini. I can't do it.
Shemini. You said it right.
We get these laws that almost everyone knows at least a little bit about, and it's the laws of diet, the laws of kosher, kosher food, kosher eating. I guess I would start with this question for you, or this observation, Rabbi, and it's not mine. I think I read it from Lord Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, former chief rabbi of England. Something along the lines of the laws of kosher ensure integrity. And in certain respects, it's never been easier to maintain a kosher diet or lifestyle of eating because of the proliferation of kosher foods, kosher restaurants. Almost every city has at least one. Gosh knows, when I grew up, we had one. I don't know. Are there eight here now in Phoenix? Something like that. Mm-hmm. At any given time, there's something like more than five. And at the same time, it's never been harder because of the challenges, too, and because of, the great number of Jews who don't affiliate with Judaism or who are tempted outward by other distractions. He was making the observation that perhaps up to 40% or more of people who think they're Jewish actually aren't even Jewish. So much have we vitiated the Jewish lifestyle in America and throughout the world. So it's at once easier and it's at once harder. Observation one, feel free to contradict or add to any of that. Observation two, I once read a rabbi being interviewed saying, when you go to a baseball stadium and you see a young Jewish boy passing up a hot dog that's being sold. Everyone eats hot dogs at baseball games because it isn't kosher. And saying no to that, he said, that's a tremendous moment. That's a tremendously spiritual and magical and holy moment when he says no to that hot dog. Mm-hmm. That would be observation two. They are always in my mind, those two things, when I think about kosher. I don't know if it resonates with you in any sense.
Yes. I mean, it resonates deeply. Regarding point one, I think that there's wisdom in the laws, because what it forces Jews to do is to stay with each other. When eating is such a communal act or such a familial act that when you have to eat the same foods, you come together to achieve that. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, kosher food
keeps the community
yeah. tight, knit, and together.
Yeah.
So that's regarding point one. Regarding point two, as I mentioned at the onset of our program today, you're right. I think that, and I see it in my own children, that when they can only eat kosher, they have to exercise a tremendous amount of self-control. And I don't think that there's anything greater in life than self-control.
Yeah.
Now, and it works almost each time because in many ways, the self-control comes from this absolute idea that I have red lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they are red lines that, as tempting as it is to cross them, I will not cross them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a small example. I was with my six-year-old son the other day in the supermarket with this long shopping list from my wife, and we had to go buy ice cream. So I'm in the ice cream section, and my son is fixated on this delicious chocolate ice cream. And he starts, you know, being agitated. I want this ice cream. I want ice cream. And I look at it. I said, Asher, it's not kosher. All the cries, all the agitation immediately stopped. And I said to myself, okay, wow. This hopefully will serve him well in life, knowing that there are red lines that are not crossable. And there is such a thing called self-control yeah. that will guide you.
The idea that the laws of kosher were for people's health is mostly myth, right? It's not really about physical health, perhaps spiritual, but not physical, right?
Right. I mean,
there's a little bit of it.
A little bit of it.
Okay.
Yeah, shellfish is not healthy.
Okay.
Right.
All right. We have a dissent here. We have a dissenting opinion here.
That's right. Shellfish is not healthy. But it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
It's a little bit of both. I would agree shellfish is not good. It's not good for you. But there's also a third element. It's not just, I think, physical and spiritual. I think there's an emotional element, as we spoke about, of the self-control, of this idea to say, you know what, there are times when no is no.
Yeah. you said most of or all of the animals are not predatory animals that are allowed to be eaten, and that's interesting. It's also a certain – the animals beyond that also have to have other characteristics, mm-hmm. a fully split hoof, and
cut. They chew their cuds, right. Which, by the way, spiritually speaking, is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because what really refers to is that animals that have split hooves are kosher, meaning that animals that are a little bit disconnected from the ground, they are a little higher than the ground, mm-hmm. which teaches us, too, that we cannot be immersed in materialism, mm-hmm. physicality. Mm-hmm. We have to be a little bit above it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remain wise and in control. That's the splitting of the hooves. And then the chewing of the cuds also reminds us that we too, in order to be kosher, we have to chew on ideas. We can't just swallow anything that the world sells us.
Nice.
We have to think about every idea. Is nice. This really good for me?
Nice.
Before I digest something, let me chew on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on my chewing, my conclusion, will I decide whether it's digestible or not?
By the way, also true, it's not the whole of the animal that's permissible either, right? You can't just eat the whole part of these animals, right?
That's correct, yes.
Cuts you're not.
That's right. Certain cuts, blood,
mm-hmm.
for example, is not allowed to be consumed.
Right.
So parts that are soaked with blood, that
right.
where blood cannot be
right.
cannot be taken out.
The nerve.
And the sciatic nerve, right. That's correct, yeah.
Which we get from
the
wrestling
story of Jacob.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jacob wrestling with an angel.
Yeah.
And the angel hitting his sciatic nerve, and that's when God said, from now on, the sciatic nerve is prohibited. It's interesting because there are many interpretations to that too, but I will say the sciatic nerve also affects our walking. And in many ways, this is to remind us that we have to stand tall and proud for our principles in life.
And finally... One other thought about this I thought was kind of interesting was there was a debate or at least a question about whether the turkey was a kosher bird because it was unknown to so many when they moved here from Europe, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes, it was unknown.
Yeah.
And in fact—
They called it an Indian chicken, I think.
Right. Yes. And in fact, some Jews, until this very day, believe it or not, do not eat turkey because of that.
I did not know that.
Misconception.
I did not.
Those are the Jews that descend from a great rabbi in Prague.
Oh, really?
He did not know about it, and he asked all of his descendants not to eat turkey, so they still respect that.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Do you eat turkey?
I do.
Okay. Rabbi Pinchas Alush, wonderful meeting your friends. Thank you for stopping in, and we'll see you next week. Rabbi.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Thanks for spending some of your week with us, some of your day with us, some of your afternoon with us. I want to thank our sponsors at YRefi. YRefi offers a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. With YRefi, you are in control. You can turn your income on or off, compound it, whatever you like. There are absolutely no fees. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. And of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. I hope, young David, you will get past your event this evening and have a chance to watch the Buckley documentary tonight on PBS if you're not taping it or if you can find it some other way. Perhaps your friends can tape it for you.
Would you tape it for me?
So that we can talk about it on Monday. If people want a great introduction to William Buckley and maybe perhaps a good book of his because he wrote so dang many. I would recommend one of two. The Unmaking of a Mayor, which is his story of when he ran for mayor of New York City in 1965. It's just really so classic. Or I would recommend Athwart History, half a century of polemics, animadversions, and illuminations, which is a collection of speeches and essays that came out from Roger Kimball just a couple of years ago. As for the rest of y'all, I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll look forward to see you on Monday. Class is dismissed, and God bless.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.